Welcome to the PodTech.net Info Talk Series here with Dan Primick at PE Wire at Thomson. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, John.
Let's talk about what you do. You report on venture capital.
I do.
And we were talking earlier about, you know, state of the venture capital, your view, some good things happening. Let's talk about the venture capital firms out there that you're covering.
Sure.
They've all come through a tough time, pretty much.
Without exception. The average, if you raised a venture capital fund in 2000, the best of the best still lost money. I mean, when you talk about being a top quartile, a top decile fund, you still lost money. You just didn't lose as much as the folks in the lower quartiles.
So everyone lost money.
Everybody lost money across the board. I'm sure there are a couple exceptions. Klein and Sequoia kind of got bailed out with Google. But for the most part, everybody lost money.
So whoever didn't have a Google or a VMware pretty much was
essentially
toast.
Yeah.
Well, from a tech perspective.
Yeah, and you also have to remember that unlike say in the mid-90s and today where VC firms were, say, on average raising $250 to $400 million, firms in 99, 2000 were raising, some of them were raising, $1 billion. So you're talking about huge losses here. When you're talking about a $1 billion fund losing money, that's a big problem.
So I was an entrepreneur from 2001 trying to do startups between now and then. And first of all, it was really a kind of a closed market. Pretty much people were licking their wounds, trying to regroup, trying to recalibrate. Now people have raised new funds. There are fresh money, 2005 funds, new energy coming in.
Yes.
You're seeing old firms like Kleiner, Sequoia, Excel, the big names, doing what they do. Other names like Bessemer and others are actively investing. But there's also new firms coming out. Talk about the kind of this old guard, new guard. Is there any actually new funds being developed? Was there bad blood that was splintered between funds not making money, guys going out on their own? I know Shasta Ventures.
Shasta, which was started by someone from Battery, someone from Trinity, and someone from NEA. There's been – I wouldn't necessarily say it's a changing the guard so much as a changing of the mastheads. There have been an enormous number of spin-out firms, and often that means a team from a firm, and if not a team, maybe even two guys from a firm and maybe someone they sit on a board with somewhere else have gone to raise their own funds. There's literally dozens of examples of that, and you also had, as part of that, you had the big corporate VC spin-out. In the late 90s, almost every major corporation, from new economy to old economy, had an in-house venture capital group, which some of them, for example, Intel Capital, is really designed to help Intel's core business. But a lot of them were really designed just to make money, which was fine. I mean, it made sense. These firms were making huge money. They had money to invest. Instead of putting it into the public markets, put it here. Almost all of those, not all, but almost all of those have been spun out, including the ones from the financial houses. The J.P. Morgan Partners is in the midst of spinning out. Merrill Lynch spun Morgan Stanley spun out its group. CSFB tried to spin out its group, had some problems, so half of them left, half of them stayed. But yeah, you've seen an enormous number of spin outs, and you have seen a lot of new groups. One other factor to that, and Shasta definitely fits into this, and so do some of the other firms. After VC firms raised essentially too much money in 99, 2000, 2001, limited partners started saying to them, you have a five-year life of this fund. You cannot invest this money in that amount of time. And not, we're telling you, we're not letting you. Just from a physical perspective, you can't reasonably do this. So what we're saying to you, VC firm, is you've got to cut the amount of capital you have under management. You had an $800 million fund, cut it to $500, cut it to $400. In case of CRV, cut a $1 billion-plus fund down to, I think, $300. When that happens, you have a lot less money under management. You need less partners. Someone's got to go, and partners either would leave voluntarily or essentially got laid off. It was downsizing.
So people are on the streets. I mean, basically, it's kind of the VC soup line, soup kitchen.
Yeah, it was. And
young partners afraid to do deals. If they do a bad deal, they get canned.
Without a doubt, got canned, or just low man on the totem pole. Because again, when you go from a $400 million fund to a $1 billion fund, you're also hiring up, and it's like any other company. If you join right before the bad time, chances are you're the first one to go, unless you've brought something particularly remarkable to the table.
Well, we see an upswing. I mean, out in the West Coast, where I live in Palo Alto, you're here in Boston. We both were agreeing kind of just now about we both see energy in an upswing.
Yes.
And there are new mastheads, new firms.
Lots of them.
Where's the action? Are some of the old guard guys, you reported recently about Mayfield,
which is still in business, and not all of, that's a firm that's had a lot of transition in the senior levels from the last couple of years, but the two main guys there, Yogan and Kevin Fong, are still there and are still investing, and to be honest, are still the reason, or one of the reasons outside of brand name, that Mayfield's still able to raise money, because people still remember what those guys did in the early mid-90s.
They're smart. Mayfield has a great reputation.
Yep.
You were kind of gave him a little ding there, but they have a great reputation. But you were saying earlier they have to prove themselves.
Well, they have a great reputation, which is based on the mid-90s, or to be honest, early 90s, mid-90s, and even before that. I mean, Mayfield is one of the oldest firms, so they have, you know, they've got decades of returns. However, Mayfield hasn't had good returns. Essentially, they've had very lousy returns in the last two funds, and the fund before that was middling. It's
so
probably a polite way to say it.
So they're in a slump.
They're in a long slump.
So as Theo Epstein would do, is we can't win championships without defense. What moves do you see these firms making, like Mayfield and potentially others? You mentioned Zero Stage was teetering.
Well, Zero Stage is teetering. Zero Stage.
Is there moves they can make besides moving talent out and bringing in new talent?
Yeah, well, there is. I mean, you can examine. You know, I think of Atlas Venture, which is raising a new fund, and I'm not saying they're really struggling, but Atlas just reorganized, kind of did an internal restructuring, literally of their groups and where they're investing. I think there's two things. One, you need to have, if you're a VC firm, you need to have a generational plan. You need to have a succession plan. It's one of the first things that prospective investors ask now, which is, you know, what's going to happen when one of your guys retires? I mean, this happens constantly. The folks who started at the beginning of venture capital are all retired, obviously, but that second generation is at retirement age, and you've seen a lot of them, you know, go off into the sunset, and you saw a lot of the, quote, new VCs, the guys who got into it in the mid-90s, realize that they could windsurf for the rest of their life, but they'd like to keep their general partner title.
Well, you've been reporting on them for a while. You've seen the downside. You see the upswing. If you had to kind of use a baseball analogy, you got the Red Sox are in first place. Yankees,
yes, they are.
Yankees are right behind but have a great team, aren't playing well to their perspective. Mm-hmm. If you look at the VC firms out there that you report on.
And the Yankees are bloated. They're bloated with money, and that's actually something that you saw in the VC market too, which is sometimes too much money isn't a good thing.
Who's out there? Who's running for the pennant of the players that you're reporting on? Who looks strong? Who, you know, feels right from your view? You report on it. Who's limping along, and who do you see kind of rising up? Who's in first place, if you will?
I hate to make such predictions because I always think the proof is in the pudding, which is the returns, and the returns you just don't know yet. I mean, those limping are obvious because those are the ones that haven't raised money or have gone out
of
business.
We're in spring training. Who's got the fresh funds, obviously?
I mean, in terms of reputation, this comes really kind of more from the investor, the limited partner point of view. I mean, the quote, next generation, the hot firms, Ignition is a really hot firm out of Seattle. They get talked about constantly. General Catalyst out here in Waltham gets talked about constantly. There's some hybrids, some tech LBO firms. Garnett Helfrich Capital is a great example. Garnett Helfrich Capital was started by Terry Garnett, who used to be with Venrock, and Dave Helfrich, who used to be with Comm Ventures. There was at least one limited partner, for example, who was a historic limited partner with both Venrock and ComVen, who decided not to go back with either of them when they went to raise money last year, but they became an investor in Garnett Helfrich Capital, which the idea is they're going to do small tech buyouts, not SunGard, but they kind of view themselves as a venture LBO hybrid because they realistically understand that those lines between those markets, just like on the high end, the line between leverage buyouts and hedge funds, is starting to blur, and they
like
see an opportunity
here. Like a Roger McNamee kind of play?
Kind of a Roger McNamee play, but on a smaller level, and also more focused on, to a certain extent, on turnarounds, not complete turnarounds, not companies out of bankruptcy, but companies that really need some help and that are struggling. Good idea, good product, even good management, but need some help. So yeah, kind of a Roger McNamee idea, but not on the large scale level. Plus, unlike Roger McNamee, I think David and Terry are going to stay with the same firm for a couple of years, unlike Roger, who seems to not jump from firm to firm.
So you mentioned people are talking about a lot. If I'm an entrepreneur, if we're entrepreneurs, who's being talked about the most in terms of you got to go there?
Oh, if you're an entrepreneur, you still want Kleiner and you still want Sequoia, and if you can't get them, then you go somewhere else. I mean,
are they the top two?
They're the top two, and they're the top two, I think, at this point today in 2005 because of Google. You know, it's funny. When Google happened, when the IPO, rather, happened, there was a lot of talk that it was going to lift the public markets as a whole, particularly the tech sector and the public markets, which I don't think really happened. I don't think it lifted that many votes. I think Google was looked at as an independent. However, among entrepreneurs, they still look at these guys as the ones who figured out how to help build Google and made it into beyond just a major money-making company, which obviously it is, billions of dollars for everybody, but into a brand name. They made it into the Kleenex of the tech world. And I think that entrepreneurs are incredibly tied to that. I think it's why Podshow, when they got money from particularly, for example, John Doerr. I mean, if Moritz had been on that deal too, it probably would have been at the top of the evening news. I mean,
yeah.
People still want that. That's still the hot guys.
Man,
and they have the contacts.
Yeah, she just called me up at podtech.net. I could have done. No. Well, I'll talk to those guys. No, I know both of them. What about XL? I mean, this XL's a big name. I mean, are they?
They are.
I mean, they got some high partners there, and Jim Breyer's done a lot of big deals. What's your view? Rolling your eyes there?
No, I'm not rolling my eyes at Jim. Jim, I'm not rolling my eyes at you. I still want some Celtics tickets. Excel is a big name. I just don't think they're at this point on the same level. I really think Kleiner and Sequoia, again, we're talking reputation here. We're not talking pure returns. We're not talking about who really is going to necessarily make limited partner value or entrepreneurial value in the future. But I think, again, because of Google, you're talking about the biggest, most successful startup company, at least in terms of total dollars. I mean,
August Capital? Dave Marquardt invested in Microsoft. Can't beat that.
They've got some heat. Again, they're more in the valley though. When I'm on the East Coast, you never hear about August really. But yeah, they've got reputation. It's interesting. You know, August got a lot of pub in part because they were the first VC firm to have a blog, which now they don't seem to populate at all. The thing gets populated once a month. Which, for what it's worth, we talked to VC blogs.
Dave is very busy doing investments, and Andrew. Exactly. Acres at Six Apart.
Yep.
Two great guys.
Without a doubt. It's actually interesting. We talked about blogs earlier. One thing you've seen, there was a huge rush of VC blogs about a year ago where every VC tried to get a blog up. And at the beginning, they were populating them constantly, linking here and there. With a couple exceptions, the postings on those have slowed to, I mean,
what do you think about the guys
crawl.
That are blogging hard, like Brad Feld and Easy Street, 10th Street podcast guy down there?
I think.
New York.
I'm mixed on it. I like what Brad's doing more than I like what Fred's doing. If I'm Brad is for the most part, and obviously there's exceptions, Brad is for the most part, it seems to me, putting out ideas on his blog for the purpose essentially of gaining some sort of market insight or getting, you know.
And helping entrepreneurs.
And helping entrepreneurs.
Amazing.
Sure, and getting a sounding board and getting access and getting his name out there. Fred has some great things on his blog from an informational perspective and from an idea perspective, but he also does the diary thing. He does, you know, his top 50 CDs and then, you know, he gets the image of the CD cover, the album cover, and puts it on, which is, I guess, great. But if I'm a limited partner in Union Square, and they are, you know, a new firm, they just raised money and they were able to do so. It took a little while, but they raised their money. If I'm an LP in Union Square, I think to myself, wouldn't I rather, I'm paying this guy a lot of money. Why the hell is he spending his time doing this? That's what I would think. I would think, you know, maybe you're doing this at midnight on your own time, but.
No, he's got a lot of energy into that.
You got a lot of energy, but spend your.
He's an investor in some pretty good deals.
He
Delicious
is.
Is a very hot.
He is. He was also with Flatiron and was an investor in a lot of bad deals. Now, I'm not trying to slag Fred. He's a good investor, and I think Union Square will probably be successful.
Correct.
But if I'm an LP, I'd rather have my general partners spending every waking working minute, at least, working for
Mobius?
Me.
I've done Mobius investments, Heidi Roizen, and.
Yep.
Excite's co-founder.
If I'm right about this, I think they're about to raise money, too. They're
doing another fund.
Yeah, they are doing another fund. They've got a good reputation.
Technorati, Feedburner. I mean, Brad's working his blog as a way to kind of understand it and game it.
They have a lot of hot companies. I think Mobius is one of those firms which is going to really need to prove itself with its new fund. Not that their returns are lousy, but they're in terms of reputation, I think they have a good reputation, but I don't think they're at the upper echelon yet. I mean, Heidi is famous, you know, from a VC rock star perspective, famous.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're at the upper echelon yet. You know, Gary is too, but they're
They've
popular.
Had some deals go south. I mean, Heidi's a great person,
and everybody did. I mean, anyone who, as Mobius did, was investing in that time period. Of course, they had deals go south. Some were more high profile than others.
They're hustling in the whole blog area. I'm a big fan of Mobius. Let's talk about that, segue into that next question,
sure.
Which is the way you're doing deals, people are doing deals these days. If you look at Mobius, they're using the blogosphere to marshal the fields, and you said, you know, Mobius is really going to deliver. Right now, venture capital is moving into his, what, fourth generation?
Yes.
I mean, I've talked with Dick Kramlich. He's one of the four
and still active.
Don Valentin, Dick Kramlich, Arthur Rock. I mean, the founding five, some of them are still around.
Yeah.
But now we've got young guys who have been entrepreneurs, made billions of dollars, millions of dollars, are now partners.
Mm-hmm.
Is that changing the way? Do we see the Brad Feld model where these guys, he was an entrepreneur, he's coming in, gaming it, getting his hands dirty, and figuring it out?
Yeah, there's a big movement that started probably at this point 4 or 5 years ago, which was to add folks with operating experience. Historically, if you look at venture capital, with a couple exceptions, the idea was generally get people who understood business, you know, get the best MBA, often even who worked at a bank, I know more than went to the buyout world, but, you know, or maybe a consultant.
Financial dude. Yeah.
Financial guys, consulting guys, you know, the traditional business people, get them in. There was a big push to get so-called operating partners, and those people then became partners. And I don't know that there's necessarily been anything borne out. Granted, some of these guys have done very well. Some of them have burned out and been terrible. I don't think there's any rule that they've been good or bad as a class. I think what has been shown, though, is it is beneficial to a venture capital firm to have a mix. I don't. There are certain firms that, for example, get raised with just with operating guys. I don't think that's a great model. I don't think it's a great model to not have any real operating experience on staff, you know, and on senior staff, you know, people who can make decisions and have a voice people listen to, not just someone who's in the corner like a board observer. Just
there are big bets. I mean, in the blogging area, like what Brad's doing at Mobius. I mean, these are big bets.
Sure.
So you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. You got to have a little balance.
You do need balance, and you need to. You on the one hand, the great thing about operational people or people who are entrepreneurs is that they're zealots, and not zealot in a bad way. Evangelist is probably the better term for it. You know, they believe incredibly strongly, and VCs have to
go for it. I mean.
To go for it, and VC is obviously high risk, and you need that. But you also, it's always good to have someone with that financial grounding who can say for a second, you know what? Yeah, blogging might take over the world as a medium. But let's go back for a minute. How are we going to actually turn this into a revenue-producing model, you know, in the multi-millions of dollar revenue-producing model that we need to make money again for our investors? So, which is why I think it's good to have that mix within a VC firm. And I think you've seen most of the VC firms, both new ones and traditional legacy ones, trying to incorporate both of those.
So final question. Of all the VC firms out there that you're covering, obviously Sequoia and Kleiner are obviously in Tier 1 and some handful of others.
And when Tier 1, just based on brand name, reputation, yeah.
Okay, so Tier 1 reputation and maybe
it's kind of like the Yankees are always going to be popular. They're always going to sell more merchandise than anyone else, even if they lose.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to do more merchandise than the Minnesota Twins.
No, right, even in the years when the Twins win the World Series, exactly true.
So, okay, so Tier 1, Sequoia, Kleiner, our question is this. Who's going to drop from Tier 1 down to Tier 2, and who's going to come out of Tier 2 and Tier 3 and surprise us next 5 years, next month?
Question I'm not prepared to answer. I don't think you can. I just don't think anyone can. And believe me, if you could, the limited partners would be the ones doing it.
Wild card then. Yankees, Red Sox, you got the powerhouses out there, Kleiner.
I'll tell you, I haven't yet. I haven't. To do it, you need to have a home run deal, but not just a home run. Every firm usually gets a home run. You need a deal which transcends venture capital, which transcends tech, and becomes part of the general consciousness to do that. And I just don't see that company out there yet, which doesn't mean it didn't get $2 million in seed funding yesterday. I just don't see it yet. I will say I don't think it's going to be a blogging company. I don't think it's going to be a podcasting company. It could very well be a biotech or a healthcare company. I do think that's the place that, even though it's riskier, and biotech, healthcare, and VC has gone through cycles repeatedly, in, out, in, out, I think there's a lot of promise there.
Well, there's a lot of action going on right now, certainly, and you report it on your newsletter, and you guys have a publication here at Thompson. Any plugs for that you want to give?
Yeah, sure. If you want to sign up for the PE Week Wire, it's a daily email service. Go to privateequityweek.com, and there'll be a little pop-up window. If you have a pop-up blocker, disable it for 5 minutes and throw your email address in there, and you'll start getting it each morning.
Great newsletter. He's breaking stories. He had the scoop on the Adam Curry financing, and a lot of great coverage. Dan, thanks for the podcast.
Thanks, John.